Current State on WKAR. Thanks for joining us. Filmmaker Christine Vachon is behind some of today's most successful independent movies, including Boys Don't Cry, Far From Heaven, and One Hour Photo. The MSU Film Collective is screening her movie I'm Not There tonight, and Vachon will speak about the state of independent film on campus tomorrow. Current State Scott Pohl spoke with Christine Vachon about her career and independent film in today's Hollywood.
Well, I mean, it's a time right now of really interesting change because the way people are consuming media is changing drastically, meaning that people are still going to movie theaters, but there's so many other kinds of platforms to watch stories. Whether it's Netflix or Hulu or YouTube, and it means that there's a lot more people can make stories, and I think it's just it's kind of a fascinating time.
Well, the technology, it seems, is also possibly making the art of making a film less expensive too, which gives entree to a wider circle of people who might have an interest in making a movie.
That's right. It's a lot more accessible. And, and I think that means that people have a much more of a do-it-yourself mentality and feel like it's within their means.
The differences between the world of independent film and the studio machine, what are the biggest differences? One thinks of money, I suppose, but creative control, I would also imagine, is an issue when it comes to choosing the path of independent film.
Yeah, but I think it's more complicated than that because what started to happen is the studios, I mean, as you can see, if you just, look and see what's playing in your local theaters, the studios are becoming more and more risk-averse, so they tend to make franchise films, and those sort of smaller budget dramas that used to be very awards-driven, they are the ones that are kind of suffering, and we're having to make them for a lot less. So I feel like it's kind of a difference now. It's not just about creative control. It's really more about what are the kinds of movies that are actually being made.
Have you had opportunities in the studio business of making a bigger budget movie than you're used to, maybe? I would assume you weren't asked to make Thor.
I was not asked to make Thor, none of the Spider-Mans or Batmans. We've made movies. It starts to get a little muddy because we've made movies that have been bought by studios. We've made movies with the Weinstein Co., with Fox Searchlight, with Warner Independent. So I think it's a question of really blurred lines. Like, at what point does a studio movie become a studio movie, and what point does an independent film become a studio movie?
That leads me to ask you about Killer Films, which you formed with your partner Pamela Koffler in 1995. I was going to ask you about the creative control aspect of owning your own company or running your own company. Are there other reasons for forming your own company like this?
Well, I mean, I kind of don't know any other way. I mean, our company Killer has over the past 25 years has become a real brand. And that's really important to me, that when people see Killer in front of a film, they think to themselves, okay, I'm about to see something interesting, provocative, and highly original.
A great name for a company, by the way, Killer Films.
Yeah, not so good for children's movies.
I won't ask you to pick a favorite from among your films, but I do want to ask you about which, in your opinion, and you can name more than one if you'd like, have had the greatest impact, either commercially or on the film-going audience. Talk about the impact of some of your movies.
Well, of course, I have to use that as an opportunity to plug my latest film, which is in theaters right now, Kill Your Darlings, with Daniel Radcliffe and Dane DeHaan.
Are you a writer?
Because I've got a job for a writer.
Rhyme, meter, conceit. Without this balance, a poem becomes slack.
Then how do you explain Whitman? Well, he hated rhyme and meter.
What's your name?
Allen Ginsberg.
So in some ways, for me, the most impactful movie is the one that's, that I'm trying to get people to see right now. But, a lot of the movies we've made have had a lot of resonance. And I just was in Poland for a retrospective And we showed two movies that I'm particularly fond of. One is called Velvet Goldmine by Todd Haynes, and the other one is called Hedwig and the Angry Inch, and it was directed by John Cameron Mitchell. And I was stunned at how many people showed up for both those screenings and how many young people showed up. I mean, people who were, like, you know, barely in kindergarten when those movies came out. So that was kind of amazing to see that those films still have such a life of their own.
I would have to bring up Boys Don't Cry, if only because of the Oscar-winning performance
by
Hilary Swank. And certainly a cultural impact and not just a box office impact.
Lynn, what are you doing here?
What are you doing here?
The girls' cell?
Oh, place is crazy. It's like, put you wherever they want. I mean, it's fine with me.
Brandon, what's going on?
You want the truth, don't you? I'm a Rampidite.
What?
Come here. It's a person who has both girl and boy parts. Brandon's real name's Tina Brandon.
Boys Don't Cry was a big, you know, it was a watershed moment in so many ways because, you know, I think nobody really believed a movie about that subject matter that was that serious and that in-depth and that tragic could go, you know, could get under the skin of such a wide audience. And obviously, you know, it's hard to imagine now, but when Hillary was cast in the film, she was genuinely an unknown. I mean, you know, couldn't get arrested unknown. I think she had a couple episodes of 90210 under her belt, and that was it. So it was an amazing story all around, extraordinary filmmaking and an extraordinary performance from somebody who seemed to come out of nowhere.
You brought up your new movie with Daniel Radcliffe. That makes me wonder about the extent to which you hear about actors who say how badly they want to work in independent films. Some actors will work in big budget films so they can afford to work for less money in independent films. Is that giving filmmakers like you entree to the bigger names out there in Hollywood?
Well, I mean, in some ways it's always been that way because, you know, actors for the most part tend to gravitate to, you know, great scripts and great material. So, you know, an agent said to me not so long ago that film is the new theater. You have to do it for love instead of money. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. But yes, I think, you know, there's a lot of actors like Daniel who, you know, obviously don't need, you know, to be part of another franchise. So they're looking for things that really test them and stretch them as actors.
I want to ask you about television, too, because I know you were involved in the production of the TV version of Ira Glass's public radio show, This American Life.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get involved with that? Is television also an outlet for independent filmmakers to a greater extent than it used to be?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, going back to what I said before, that, you know, film is becoming more risk-averse, I think television is becoming less risk-averse all the time. And people, you know, audiences turn to TV to see, you know, stories about morally ambiguous characters and, you know, quote, unsatisfying endings or ambiguous endings. And it's a lot of independent filmmakers who a few years ago would have thought that working in television was a come down of sorts are now flocking there because they get to really tell their stories honestly.
Are you interested at all in moving into episodic storytelling? And I'm getting at things like the Netflix programs like Orange is the New Black and House of Cards. Amazon is producing some new original content. Is episodic storytelling something that interests you?
Absolutely. And we've been, you know, we have a lot of things in development. You know, we're really, I mean, the closest we've come is Mildred Pierce. But that was, you know, essentially a six-hour movie. And we're interested, you know, in doing, you know, something like that that lasts years.
When you visit a college campus like Michigan State, are you encouraged by what you see among young people who are interested in filmmaking? And what sort of message do you have for people who want to go into movie making?
I think that in some ways it's time to stop saying filmmaking or movie making, and it's time to start using the term storytelling, you know, or content making, because the real message right now is that we have to be length agnostic, we have to be platform agnostic, we have to take advantage of all the different opportunities, but the notion that you can only say what you want to say in a theatrical length feature film has to go out the window. So I guess my real message to young filmmakers, but most of them seem to know it already because this is how they're growing up, is that they have to be entrepreneurial. And they have to really look at all the different ways they can tell stories and figure out the best platform for each story they want to tell.
I would imagine that college-age audiences are already in tune with your message to a greater extent than say, my generation might be.
I think that's correct. But I still think there's some, you know, film schools tend to sort of promote this mythology that, you know, that what you really are trying to do is do exactly those theatrical feature-length films. And I think that in this day and age, we've really got to stop thinking that way.
All right. Well, based on what you just said, instead of identifying you as filmmaker Christine Vachon, I'll thank content producer Christine Vachon. Nice talking with you.
Nice talking to you. Take care.
For Current State, this is Scott Pohl.